You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
Welcome to another edition of the Bison Report Radio Podcast here on a Victory Monday. You're getting this early on a Tuesday morning, and joining me this evening, again, your morning, on Bison Report Radio, presented by Gateway Chevrolet, Trevor Gebhardt. Three, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ross. Always good to come off a playoff victory. It's what we do best, like we said in the pre-pod. And three more to go to hang 10. As Scoots and Ladders would say.
Yeah, I love the hang 10 video. Very cool. Very, very cool. Very easy rallying cry. I've mentioned this before, but man, just what the multimedia side of this, you go back to guys like Ryan Nelson, so talented, even before him, Casey, who ended up, his last name's escaping me. He ended up at Oregon State. I think Casey was the one that did a lot of the stuff when you guys were they have just had a run now with Scoots and Ladders of unbelievable creative directors and unbelievable young men and women that are committed to the fan experience. And honestly, the student athlete experience, like if you don't think that those videos help with recruiting, you're out of your mind. If you don't think that current players think it's cool that they're on those videos and that helps with the student athlete experience, and that helps with retention and stuff like that. It does. I mean, it matters. It's a big time thing. Anyway, that's a little bit of a off the beaten path here. Go and kind of break right into the news here. This is something we knew, we've mentioned before, and this isn't to like brag or how cool we are, how connected we are, stuff like that. Like every once in a while we find stuff out that we're just not comfortable disseminating to the public until somebody else has done it, and until it's okay with the coaching staff. I don't know why, they chose so long to officially announce that Hunter was out, and why they kept going with this second opinion thing. I do believe that they got second opinion, but I think they known for a long time that they were not going to have Hunter Lipke again this season. And that's been officially, I think Jeff Kolpak of the Forum is who finally spilled the beans there. We've known this for a while. Hunter's out for the season, and that is something that we'd heard broken scapula, just stuff in the shoulder that had a 6 month recovery time and a 6 week recovery time and a 6 month timeline for being back to 100%. Like there's just no way, none of it ever made sense for him to play again. So I've seen chatter online, I've seen stuff about the fact, and it is a fact, that he does have another year of eligibility should he want to return. I don't think that it's in Hunter's best interest to return, and I don't think that he will. I'll just put it to you that way. He's a young man, got married in the offseason. I would argue that it is probably time to move on, especially from what I know from folks around the draft community, not only analysts, but with teams. NFL teams like Hunter Lipke just fine. There's a certain, and I hate to even say this, but like there's a certain ceiling on him as a fullback, even just being categorized as a fullback. Like there's a certain height that he can reach, and it's probably the third round, honestly, as far as like the actual peak of where an H-back, fullback, tight end type of kid is going to go. It's going to be round three. It's going to be around, you know, that 90th pick, et cetera. So I think he's established a draft ceiling. I think he's established a draft floor. And being 1 year older, I don't think is going to help. That's just my two cents. Would the 2023 Bison be better with Hunter Lipke? You bet your ass they would. But I just don't think it's a thing that's going to happen. Let's see. What else? More awesomeness from Christian Watson. First rookie since Randy Moss to have 8 touchdowns in 4 games. I was joking, not even joking, but just like people know I'm involved in Packers content creation as well. People were, you know, trying to ask my honest opinion because I got a lot of receipts. I mean, Trev, we're receipts guys, you and I. We're big receipts guys.
I have more Christian Watson receipts than I care to admit.
I bet you do.
Oh, yeah.
And so people are kind of, you know, like, Ross, outside of receipt, like, you were right. Congratulations. You can get your flowers. But, like, what are you really thinking? And my thing is it's so interesting to see where they're going in the sense of you're no longer talking about him. And I think it would be a tremendous achievement if he ends up in the Packers Hall of Fame. A tremendous achievement. But the guys whose names he's being associated with as he breaks and ties these records are NFL Hall of Famers, not Packers Hall of Famers, NFL Hall of Famers. And that's, look, we are a very long way from putting a gold jacket on that young man's shoulders, a very, very long way. Yeah. But it's incredible to consistently see his name mentioned with guys like Rice Moss and Odell Beckham Jr. And what Odell was able to do it as a rookie, which was just banana land as well. He's a special kid, man. He's a special kid.
So, I mean, obviously this is a player like Christian Watson for me is like the closest thing that I have to like living a dream with him wearing a Bison uniform and then a Packer uniform. So for me, it's like I'm extremely proud of the young man for what he has become. He is everything and more, and he deserves all of it. And it is amazing to watch. I think we knew he had superstar capability. I think that's evident, especially having watched him for the past few years and the type of speed that he has and the alien-like body frame. I didn't see this. I did not see this coming for what he has produced. I knew he was capable of it. I didn't know what happened this early. I told a lot of people that making that jump from FCS to the NFL, being a feature receiver in an Aaron Rodgers-led offense is a massive jump in a year. And it is. And it was kind of a roundabout path of how it got there. But I told a lot of people that about week 9, you would start to see it. And Christian Watson has done that and more. And I saw something absolutely absurd about he has 30 touches in his NFL career and 54 points. That's 1.8 points a touch. Christian Watson basically averages a 2-point conversion every time he touches the football as a rookie. That to me is absurd. And this path that he is on is something that is extremely special. Don't take it for granted and enjoy it while it's happening. And like you said, Ross, there's a long way to go for him to have that gold jacket type moment. This kid keeps his head focused. The blocks are there. That's all I'm gonna say about it. The blocks are there.
Well, I mean, he's the top 5 receiver athlete ever. Ever. It's not debatable. It's just there in the testing. It's not, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
People that are that tall don't run that fast. They don't jump that high. They don't run that fast that quick. And they don't turn, they don't change directions like that.
Yeah, that acceleration's stupid. He outruns angles. He has an angle outran 10 yards before it's there.
It's crazy.
And you can see it. Like, that's the thing. Like, someone who doesn't follow it necessarily as close as maybe somebody who has watched and analyzed football maybe as much as we have, they can also see that. It's absurd. And I'm just so proud of the young man. It makes me very happy to talk about. And I know we're going on a rant here, but only that, but he's not the only Pro Bison absolutely murdering his position right now.
And it's fun that it's rookies, you know, and I guess that, you know, we're always in an interesting spot, I guess, just because ever since, and I think people enjoy it. I haven't heard anything different, you know, ever since we started, or ever since I started this new era of Bison Report, I think in 2019, I've always had former players, and it's relationships that I cultivated. You and I had a different relationship because I never covered you, you know.
Right. We watched wrestling together at the Astros
house. So there's a different relationship, but like now guys that I covered, like Quinn and Zach, are guys that now work for us. So that always is an interesting thing, because now like full disclosure, I've had beers at Zorba's with Cordell Volson. And that's not, oh, you're so cool. You've had beers with Cordell. It's just, you're now covering people that you're either friendly with, or you are people within our organization will probably have Cordell in their wedding. So it's always tough when it's like Christian. I know Christian's dad. I know Christian's mom. I've covered Christian. I've said what's up to Christian in social situations. It's like, do we lose track of Chris Board? Do we lose track of Easton Stick? Do we lose track of guys that were just players that we covered, as opposed to guys that, like, if we really wanted, and we've done it twice now because he's been on the Benchwarmers, he's been on the Bison Report show, we can get Cordell whenever we want. Zach just picks up the phone. That's the level of friendship that we're at with him. I don't think that we're giving him undue cred, though. I mean, Cordell's playing at that level. This is not Cordell because Cordell is buddies with Zach. This is not Cordell because Ross had beers with Cordell on the 3rd of July. This is Cordell because Cordell is the highest graded Cincinnati Bengal on offense. By the way, I think Ja'Marr Chase came back, right?
Yes, and the Cincinnati Bengals right now are a threat to go to the Super Bowl.
Okay, so let's just talk about who's on that offense. And it's one game. It's one game. I get that. But this is a per snap, and he's playing all the snaps at left guard, believe you me. This is a per snap he's getting, and I don't think Mixon played, but he's getting a higher grade in that game. It's a one-game sample size, but he's grading out higher than Joe Burrow. He's grading out higher than Samaje Perine. He's grading out higher than Ja'Marr Chase, than Tyler Boyd, than T. Higgins, than Lyle Collins, than Jonah Williams. That, like, you just go down the list of either top 100 picks or flat-out studs that we've just – It's been said. It's been the guys that they're selling the jerseys out of the pro shop, and he's the highest graded player on offense. It's crazy. It's so impressive to do that as a rookie, even for one game, to be like, you know what? Grading game ball, Cordell Volson. It's wild.
Should we take this pod just entirely off the rails and talk about the what could have been 2020 Bison?
No, we should not. It'll make me sad.
It would be a depressing pod.
Somebody tried to make Matt do that in the middle of a press conference, and he's like, I just want to walk into the river. Like,
everybody stop. Everybody behave.
Right.
I had to do it. I mean, we talked about, obviously, Watson and then Cordell, and then I had to.
Yeah. Watson, Cordell, Rado. I mean, man, imagine
we got to stop it there.
Imagine if Jabril doesn't leave for LSU.
Obviously, Trey's going to stay around because he has to for his third year of eligibility.
Yeah. They would have been something else. Christian, I mean, there's like 11 leaguers on that roster.
We got to stop. We got to stop.
Anyway, Friday night at 6, that's an interesting one. They've gotten into so much of a rhythm, you know, where NDSU basically gets to call their shot, gets their normal 2:30 p.m. kick in the first round. Well, I guess it's technically the second round, the first round that NDSU actually participates in, which is the seeded round. The round of 16. We'll call it the round of 16. Round of 16, NDSU gets to call their shot, plays at 2:30. Then the round of 8 is usually 11 a.m. on ESPN, the original. Looks great on TV. NDSU is obviously the biggest brand in FCS. That's been their normal thing. And then when the bowl season starts, then instead of doing that, they throw NDSU on the Friday Night Lights. Looks like they're going to inverse that Looks like Brookings, which, my God, I can only imagine about 1,600 people would go to a Friday Night Lights game when it's 8 degrees in Brookings two Fridays from now. But I digress. Poor Tommy Malott's going to have to play in front of about 60 sets of Jackrabbit parents, and that's about it. But that's another complaint for another day. I just thought this was odd. The decision-making process was odd. Yes, North Dakota State isn't the higher seed, but they're still the better brand, and I think definitely will look better on TV. Even if they just get the 13,000 that they had for the Montana game, it looks better on TV than whatever goes on in Brookings.
Yeah, I know, and it, you know, we have obviously Jackrabbit listeners of the pod, and you know, I'm sure there'll be some commentary around it, but it's spade's a spade. You know, we say that a lot here, and definitely different. I'd have to imagine
people didn't show up to the game. I'm sorry, people didn't show up to the game. 6,000 people came to the game. Say whatever you want. 6,000 people came to the game.
Yeah, no, and it's another product of the Maction train that they got on their Tuesdays. That's basically what it's going to be, because you got to think about where those camera angles are going to be coming from, which is obviously the press box side or the home side at Dana J. Dykow Stadium. That opposite sideline is going to be bare bones. You're not going to get a sea of purple of Holy Cross fans sitting over there. It ain't going to be packed to the gills. And that's just the reality of the situation. Maybe it has something to do with the whole game day thing that they had in 2019, a little bit more recency of that. But whoever's making that decision, I don't really know. Hopefully, you know, it's for a rhyme or reason for down the road. I don't know. It is what it is. Just go win the ball game.
Anyway, Coach said Hofstede and Spence are fine. So there you go. That's your injury update. And Wirtz is fine too. In fact, Wirtz could have gone back in the game, but Kubitz was in such a rhythm that they just said, whatever, we'll just roll with him.
Okay.
Save him for the week. So there is your injury discussion. Moving on to the next point of discussion, which is Tundra Mania coming up this Sunday. You have 2 days. You'll have a break. You'll have a day to recover Saturday, a Saturday of recovery before you need to head to Horace for Tundra Mania. And Bison fans, we have something special for you. Very exciting stuff with North Dakota State head coach Matt Entz. We have talked in the past about our friend Eric Bunnell. Eric is our video guy here at Bison Report. Also, camera operates for WDAY. You have seen some of the messages and stuff, or things that Forum Communications has done, talking about Eric and his battle with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Young man with a young family, didn't deserve this, but we are here to help. In that vein, Coach Entz, I asked for a football, and he said, no, I'm going to give you a helmet. And so we have a helmet that you can find on Facebook right now. We're going to tweet it out, but the team and the coaches signed a helmet for Eric. That is going to be a silent auction event. We're going to set it up on a table. That's going to be a silent auction event at Tundra Mania. And what we're going to do is actually take the money, because he hasn't hit his 20% match up to $5,000 yet. We're going to take the money from the silent auction at Tundra Mania, and we're going to donate it directly to his Lend a Hand Up. Because that money will then be 20% match. So if someone bids $300 on the helmet, well, we're going to get an additional 20%. We're going to get an extra $60 going towards Eric's recovery from cancer. He has gone all the way through chemotherapy and is now just working through the radiation part of the process. So unbelievable job by Matt Entz, unbelievable job by Bison football. And, we're just so pleased. And Trev, you keep pointing. What do you want?
I put it in the chat before this. I don't know if you read it, because I know we were going through the script and everything in the
pre-production. $100 on the helmet from Trev.
Yep. So the bid's going to start at $100, and that is because that is a bid from me. Okay. So I can't be present, unfortunately, but that is my bid. If you outbid me, you got to bid more than that. So,
and folks, just so you know, we're going to allow this once. This is going to be a closed bidding situation. You have to be at Tundra Mania to bid on the helmet.
Correct.
It's part of you know, getting the community aspect of it, getting people in there, getting people to physically see it. Please don't touch it, but getting the chance to physically see it. But we will start the bidding off at $100 with Mr. Trev Gebhardt in hopes, obviously, that we get the 20% match and we are able to maximize everything going to Eric. But it's up on Facebook. We will tweet it out. You will be able to find what the helmet looks like. And man, we just really look forward to seeing everybody on Sunday at Tundra Mania. It's going to be super fun. Awesome card. Some Christmas aspects to it as well. I've heard kids five and under are getting in free. And people, you know, I keep talking about this. It's like, well, we'll just show up. Just so you know, and it doesn't make a hill of beans a difference to me, but just so you know, general admission is $15. Kids five and under get in free. General admission is $20 at the door. So save yourself $5. Order your tickets now. You just print them off. QR code. We'll scan it. Let you in the building, et cetera, et cetera. Tundra Mania, 4:30 p.m. Sunday. Horace, be there. Trevor.
What's up?
I asked the question. I felt it was a legitimate question. Why is this different? North Dakota State opening at 6.5-point favorites against Montana. And I said to you, why must I respect the Big Sky? Please tell me, why is this not fake football? Why is this NDSU-Montana game different? Why is this – what? Please make it make sense to me why the Bison are less than a touchdown home favorite against a team from a confident conference that they have done nothing but dominate in the playoffs. And, Trevor, we got our answer. And the answer is it was not different at all.
Mm-hmm. And that was much more beautifully said than my 10-minute rant as an answer to your question in the pre-pod, because I I went in circles. I could not figure it out. I was just as confused as the next person that follows this through and through. And I think everybody kind of knew that. I mean, Montana was one of the last teams in. You know, it is what it is. And we nailed our score prediction with it. I mean, I think I had 45-22, something like that. I was 4 points off of each team. You know, I was texting the group chat, stop the count, basically. Like,
yeah,
kick the field goal, turn off the lights, and move on just so I can be right, you know. So, yeah, it was fun to see. I mean, it's December football. It's what we're used to seeing. And I just the matchup itself, it was not going to be a good night for the Grizz, barring some unforeseen circumstance, you know, a pick six. I know they did have one of those, but just, you know, they were going to get physically dominated up front by nature of what happened against Montana State. They got exposed, and the final result ended up being a 23-point victory with a touchdown late by Montana. So the score was actually closer than what was happening on the field.
Yeah, I think that one, that last one happened against the twos, which, hey, mm-hmm. it's important to get those guys reps. And in fact, it's important with just the raw number of snaps and games that these guys play to get the ones off the field, I think, is important when you're still potentially 5 weeks away from the season being over, should it right. end in Frisco the way that everybody wants it to. But the numbers are staggering, man. 453 yards on the ground on 42 attempts. You're averaging 10.8 a clip. That's obscene. Six rushing touchdowns is obscene. Career long 68-yard rushing touchdown from Cam Miller, Camden Vic, also obscene. Just a dominant performance in every way. I mean, they were, you know, I think there was some concern after the pick six from Cam, but and this isn't on the show script, but we can get into it too. Mm-hmm. They tugged on Superman's cape a little bit too, and I thought the emotion. I don't know if you saw the clip where Ents kind of had everybody on me right now, and there was a big huddle around the head coach, and I don't know how many four-letter words were flying there, but I will say this: my level of respect just this season for head coach Matt Ents and what he's about has increased quite a bit. And this might not even be a season. In fact, they're not favored. Like I think more, there's a better chance than not that they don't win the championship. And that's just, you know, I mean, they came into this thing. I thought the number was obscene, but they're 8-1 to win the championship, meaning 7 out of 8 times they're not going to get it done. But what he's gone through this year, and as fun as the years right after Chris left and he went undefeated and won championships and all those things, I've just been so impressed with him, man. And you can see what a team thinks of their coach in a moment like that. And you can go back and watch the replay. You don't even need sound. And you see every set of eyes just staring a hole through Matt Entz's head and listening to every single word that man is saying. And boy, I was impressed with the team's response to some of the chippy stuff from Montana and not getting into playing at that level, not hitting guys late, not playing beyond the whistle, not, you know, and the Fargo Dome's a dangerous place. You start playing past the whistle. I mean, we've seen that with the close sidelines, although Courtney did throw a guy into the kicking net, which I thought was something. But, I just was impressed with the way that they handled what could have certainly been deemed as maybe some dirty play from the Grizz.
Yeah, so I've been on record saying this throughout this whole season. The level of maturity and growth that this group has had as a whole is the biggest jump that I've seen from the start of the season to the end of the season. Because the September 2022 Bison would have probably engaged in that chippiness just a little bit. Not from something necessarily that they're inflicting, but maybe in response to what had occurred on, like, Spencer Wagey, for example. Take it, move on, and let your play on the field do the talking. And that's what this group is starting to do. And seeing that was so encouraging because it told me that this group is ready for what's about to come their way. Because these last three games, in theory, you know, you got to keep winning to earn it. But these last three games are the toughest that you'll see throughout the season, not just from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint too. So watching that growth for me makes me so proud as an alum, because even though it's taking a little bit longer than what we would like to see, they're getting there. And sometimes maybe it takes a moment. Sometimes it takes a game. Sometimes it's just what the group is about as a whole. But seeing that was a very pivotal moment for where I think and foresee this playoff run going. And so just, I was super proud of that from a leadership standpoint, because you could just feel it just watching it. I didn't have any audio. I was with Carla at a restaurant watching Kansas State and TCU play. I had the Bison game on my phone on ESPN Plus and was witnessing that just without audio. But you could feel it just by watching the body language. So knowing the program, understanding the guys and what they go through, that response was the best thing to happen to them. And I'm going to even backtrack a little bit. Not on what I'm talking here, but in a timeline manner. And say that a lot of that has to do with the guys that are there and are present, because that matters. And I'll leave it at that.
Not Cam's best day. I thought threw one kind of up for grabs when Mathis mossed the guy. And then, you know, obviously the pick six was just terrible. But did enough, and then, you know, certainly made up for it with his legs, QB power on the first drive, and then 68 and out the gate. He just keeps showing that, you know, people can disrespect him as an athlete at their own peril, because these are obviously Division I, you know, players that he's either embarrassing or, you know, running past, running around. Whatever, you don't just get 68-yard touchdowns. You don't just get 7 rushing touchdowns in 2 games as a quarterback if you're not an athlete. So, man, Mathis was big again. I voted for him as my last all-conference wide receiver ahead of Nassim Brantley. And then, you know, obviously with Yonke and doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I felt like, you know, he's been that dude all season long. And they don't throw it enough. But as we've seen with Christian Watson, that doesn't mean don't isn't the same as can't. And I really believe that Zach Mathis could be a special player in an offense that needed him more than NDSU does. And that's not to say that they're not using him enough. I just mean that they don't need to have him be a superstar, but I think he could be. What an awesome story. And what a cool thing that he's coming back for another year next year. I'm happy for Zach, and just so happy that for the team that he's able to do what he's able to do, because I don't know that they'd be out of luck without him, but man, without DJ Hart, without Phoenix Sproles, without, you know, some of the guys, like, he kind of is the veteran leadership for that group. And that helps. Veteran leadership helps when it's also your best player. And I think that that's a more important, like, the guy that talks a lot but isn't that good has some value. But boy, oh boy, when the best guy is leading the group, I think it's important, and that's what we're seeing from Mathis.
Well, yeah, the biggest thing about Zach, and especially him coming back for another year, is that I think you're going to see that more so in like another year or two, because when you're putting yourself in that position, you understand your role and responsibility to the program. And to me, it's very evident that he has, and he has matured very quickly, which makes me very proud of him too. And that some of these young guys that he needs to pull along are people that he needs to put a lot of time and energy and effort into that last year. So his role this year, in terms of stepping up in pivotal moments, which he has every single time, he's answering the bell. Somebody needs to go grab a ball on a third down conversion. That's been Agent Zero. How and what he has done to mature as a young man in the program are the things that he is going to have to instill into the young individuals that are stepping into the program or stepping into roles that are a little bit larger than what they're maybe ready for right away in the season next year. So those are the things that I think that have a trickle-down effect that you'll see maybe a year or two later. And to me, it just makes me proud that you have somebody like Zach who maybe didn't foresee himself in that type of role when he entered the program, and he has now done that, and he's going to continue to do that. So I tend to get caught up in talking about the wide receivers, obviously by nature of where I played. But to go back to kind of where you were starting about the passing game, yeah, Cam, not his greatest game in terms of an aerial attack standpoint, but at the same time, I get it. They weren't looking to throw the ball 20 times on Saturday, just to be honest. So, you know, he does go 6 for 10, throw 60%, which is okay. The pick six was obviously not his proudest moment, but guess what? Just get it out of the way, learn from it, and move on. So it's a good thing that he had not his best game in that round, because that game was going to be run. That game was going to be won with the run. So, which I think we'll see more of on Friday night. Just my opinion.
Sure. Folks, Bison Report Radio Podcast brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. Check out the new Silverados at Gateway Chevrolet. The half-ton Silverado 1500 has four different engine options. I myself rock the 5.3-liter V8. It's got the 8 cylinders when I need the extra power, the 4 cylinders when I do not, and I'm just looking for that sweet, sweet fuel economy. Gas around Fargo dipping below $3. Love to see that. Goodness gracious. But go check out the good folks on the I-29 frontage road in Fargo, or get more details at gatewayfargo.com. Thought it was an interesting wrinkle. They're getting a little bit thin at tight end with Stuffle in a brace and losing Hofstad, things like that. They decided to use Cody Mock at his old position of Ogre, playing Jake Rock at tackle. What did you think of that little wrinkle? Bringing the Ogre package back and using your top 100 pick as your extra tight end with getting young Jake Rock some reps.
I think it's getting creative with what you have. I mean, when you get thin at a position, you have to get creative in some capacity. So you have to supplement it somewhere. What that is going to vary depending upon position, obviously personnel. Definitely a biased lens here, but I thought it was a very smart move to do that, because now you're putting it on tape. He's obviously not going to go out and run, you know, 10 different routes here, but you put it on tape. It does have to be prepped for. And a player of his caliber, it has to be honored and respected. And so to me, it's the Ant special. You are going to require the team that you are now playing against to prep for something that is maybe going to happen. So to me, that's what I saw of it. Definitely very interesting wrinkle, kind of like you have noted, but I just hope they actually utilize it. I hope they actually pull something out of it and put some sort of package in there, like a 2-point conversion or something, you know?
And honestly, you know, I feel like you're in a situation with Cody where, or with that Ogre package, where that's your best play, not best play, but that's one of your best looks against West Coast football teams. I'll throw Arizona in, into the Big Sky conversation with just the style that they play, which is we have been built from the ground up to defend the spread, period. And Montana, by the way, Montana was built from the ground up to defend the spread. And so are the Arizona Wildcats. So are the Montana State Bobcats. So is Eastern Washington. So probably is Sacramento State. I watched that game, was so ridiculous because it was just in an absolute monsoon. I tried to learn stuff from Richmond, Sac State, but it was honestly hilarious to just try and watch them play football in that weather. So what do you, you know, what was NDSU's response to Arizona and their you know, two basically all Pac-12 level edge rushers? Well, I bet you don't love, you know, getting down blocked by Mason Miller and Gray Zabel for run and ride, or messing with Gray Zabel and Cody Mauk and Nash Jensen if we're running left. And, oh, by the way, here's Noah Gindorf. Like, I don't think that's a life that – I don't know if it's necessarily a life that Samford wants to live. But I tell you what, if you happen to have Sacramento State in the semis and Montana State down in Texas again, you're going to want that six offensive lineman package, because it's going to be your biggest – mismatch. It's going to be these 230-pound edge rushers that all they want to do is get after, and I know he's not there anymore, but get after Eric Berrier. All they want to do is get after Tommy Mellott. All they want to do is get after Lucas Johnson. All they want to do is get after these Big Sky-esque quarterbacks. They don't want to spill power. I promise you they don't. Like, they don't want that life. And you saw that with even 58 O'Connell. You saw that with O'Connell. He didn't want that life. Playing for the Grizz. Robbie Houck didn't want that life, coming down and filling gaps, you know, like being in there. And we missed that point in the thing. And I'll just let him go with this. Robbie Houck is one of the more overrated players I've ever seen. You saw one of their, and I think 37 is the number that's incredibly important to that program. They give it to a specific kid that exemplifies, you know, Grizzly football and what they're all supposed to be about. And he basically accused the administration, the coaching staff, of going in and you know, curing each game and going through all the tackles and assessing as many. And I laugh about this because I always thought that NDSU might have done that with Joe Mays. If they, back in the day, in the Joe Mays and Steve Walker days, if nobody knew who made the tackle, I think Dan would just yell Joe Mays, and that would be who they wrote down, because people just assumed that Joe made the tackle. I'm really getting off on a tangent here, but you know, he said, like, look, Dante Olsen, in my opinion, is the all-time leading tackler for the Grizz, not Robbie. And he was the lowest graded defensive player by PFF College. I compared him to Colton Hegel. That was actually disrespectful to Colton Hegel. I'll be honest with you. That was, Colton's a much, much better player than Robbie was, because he's small. He can't cover, gets in on a lot of tackles. I guess that's great, but they victimized that kid. And I don't know. I just was very, very not impressed. And maybe I'm just being mean because he's the coach's son, but I can see where literally like ex-teammates of his are saying this guy actually gets treated this way because he is the coach's son.
It makes sense. I've seen that too. I mean, he's a decent player. He did have a bad day. And I do think that's indicative of what NDSU had schemed.
That still shot of Mathis grabbing that thing over his head is hilarious.
Yeah. But that's my take. And anytime there's a good player, it's no different than the Montana State game last year against Troy Anderson, who is now playing for the Atlanta Falcons. Was what
phenomenal football player, did not want the smoke that day.
Freak athlete. I still want to be Troy Anderson when I grow up. I want to be 6'4", 240, 250, and run like him. That'd be amazing. And I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting like hell for him. Sometimes when you have a player like that that's highly touted, sometimes you just got to go attack it. It's kind of like the old shouldn't say old. It happens all the time. But in movies, when like the general or like the leader gets attacked and he's getting beat in his, you know, one-on-one battle, everybody else retreats. Well, there you go. That's pretty much what it is on a football field. So, you know, you attack Troy Anderson, you attack Robbie Houck, whoever the individual is that's supposed to be your guy, go beat him up and watch the rest of the defense retreat because they know they're defeated.
Wagey was awesome, man. I put out that as something that if they're going to be what they want to be, which is standing in the confetti at the end, he has to give everything that he has. All he's a 6-year guy. Everything that is left in the Spencer Wagey tank needs to be empty at the end of the season. Then he can go to the Hula Bowl and hopefully to the NFL, so on and so forth. But everything that he has left to give to North Dakota State, he's got to do because he's the one that can win the one-on-one matchups on the outside. 8 quarterback pressures, including a sack, or excuse me, 9 total quarterback pressures, including a sack. 9 pressures in one game is some George Karlaftis stuff. I mean, that is impressive stuff. And you think about where, like specifically, and I haven't watched enough Montana State, but the worst player on South Dakota State's offense is the right tackle. That's not news to anybody. You go back and turn on the tape from the SDSU game. That kid cannot block Spencer Wagey. And if you can wreck a game, I mean, that's what you have to do to beat South Dakota State. Somebody's got to wreck a game.
Yeah.
And Spence wrecked this game. And I think he's going to be the guy. And all due respect to Shaka Rokes, to Tony Pierce, to Dylan Hendricks, to whomever. Spencer Wagey can be him, and that is what they need.
Well, 9 QB hurries is not just wrecking a game, it's deciding.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, obviously, being another South Dakota kid, clearly have bias towards him. I've been known to brag about him in the group chat pretty much every week on the Bison Report group chat. But you're exactly right. This kid has to continue to do that throughout the playoffs to give them a shot. I firmly believe in him. And to go a step further, the bias goes deeper because he played at Watertown High School, which is where I was born. That's where I was originally going to go until we moved to Sioux Falls when I was about 9. My brother graduated from Watertown High School. So being able to see an arrow, I was an arrow at one point in my life. So it's very cool to see. It's very cool to see where he has come from. He's got a really cool story. Just a phenomenal young man as a whole. And, you know, hopefully he continues the way he has wrecked games and decided games from his position.
Other than that, though, I mean, this was – I get it. I mean, you have to assign 6 of those points to 7 of those points to Cam Miller. But another non-dominant defensive performance. I mean, I think you get to 26 or whatever they got to. Like, that's certainly higher than the threshold of what Code Green's standard is. I'm not saying it's embarrassing or it's terrible or, oh, my God, it's going to cost them the season. But is this a team that's just going to have to win like this? I mean, are they – if they get to the semis and get to Frisco, are they going to have to get into the 40s because their defense is going to allow people into the high 20s?
I disagree. I firmly, firmly disagree, and I'll tell you why. It's because you have a touchdown late with a minute to play, and you have a pick six. That's 14 points. Wash it off the board. That puts them at, what, 12?
Okay.
Well, there you go.
Sure. Yeah, because just looking at the
– how many explosive plays happened? Okay, I'm going to go through the box score here. Touchdowns of 68. You got the fumble recovery. 75, 68, 73. Four touchdowns of basically 70 yards apiece. You're not hanging on to the football.
No, you're right, because you've got a two-play drive, The Cam Miller touchdown run was a three-play drive. So you're giving the football directly back.
Yeah, and they got the pick six and the late touchdown, which doesn't matter. It doesn't change the cost of butter. I mean, it's a 30-point ball game before that.
Sure.
I mean, 29, they missed the extra point, whatever. But yeah, I think
the last 13 points were – no, the last 14 – 20 – yeah, okay, never mind. Sorry. Doesn't matter. The last two touchdowns were a pick six and a – touchdown with a minute five left against the second stringers. So you're right.
That's fair. North Dakota State lost the time of possession battle.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the end all be all. And even third down conversions. That's the thing. We didn't have it on the script, but just looking at it, to me, that's the biggest concern. I mean, 3 for 7. I mean, when you have that many explosive plays, it's hard to
especially, knock. Yeah, I was going to say, when you're only put in seven third down positions.
But still, you put in seven of them, and you only converted three.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, spade's a spade. And, you know, they didn't put them in scenarios where they necessarily had to convert a big third down. So it's hard. You take that with a grain of salt, but those are the things that you do have to find, because they're going to get into a game, whether it's this week. Hopefully not, based off what I've seen so far. It doesn't appear to be. And if you're listening to this as a player, please don't listen to that. But when you get to like the semis and the finals, those are things that are going to matter. So I would say that is a one thing that I would bring to light, that you could get into those situations like you brought up if you're not converting. If you're converting 3 of 7 on third down, then yes, you could. I don't foresee a 2014 situation. I don't. 2014, we played Coastal Carolina for the second time. That quarterback agreed to Fargo Dome for the second time. I have since made friends and was in a wedding with the guy that we played against from Coastal Carolina. So, like, I've gotten to kind of know a little bit of what was going on the inside throughout those time frames, and I don't quite frankly see that occurring here. I think 26 is more indicative of the pure dominance of the offense for NDSU in the rushing attack and the big plays. And obviously the late score, that's going to inflate that number just a little bit.
You talk about respect too, and we'll get to an ad break here shortly. You talk about respect too. I got to really tip my cap to Tyler Roll this season. We've been staunch Tyler Roll defenders. Bison Report as a whole. Mm-hmm. You lead the Valley in scoring offense, and then you put 49 on Montana. In a season in which you've lost Noah Gindorf, in a season in which Phoenix Sproles quit the team, in a season in which you've lost Hunter frickin' Lupke, and you still just refuse to stay like out of the 40s in a must-win game at home. Like, if the weather wasn't stopping T-Roll's offense, nobody was. I'm just so impressed with what these guys have done with the personnel issues. And by the way, as much as I'd love to put this whole thing on the offensive line and the great player that Cody Mauch is and the great player that Nash Jensen is, they haven't even had it great. They're losing Mason Miller for the season. They're losing Jalen Sundell for the season. Yeah. I mean, this is what Tyler Roll, and you talk about the next man up mentality. They've just been unbelievable. The amount of points that they are able to score, if it's not blowing 38 miles an hour out there, just incredible. Just absolutely incredible. Folks, if you are doing business with an insurance company and their name's on the door, you pull up to the building, the only thing they sell is that one company. You're taking a gamble that that company, that one thing that they sell, is exactly what your business needs, what your family needs, what you need. Don't take that gamble, because if you do, you're going to have to either accept whatever result comes from that company, or you're going to have to go around to 6 or 7 more agents and shop around. Don't shop around. Let Quinn Ollo at Tundra Insurance on the main Dragon Horse shop around for you. Quinn's got up to 20 different carriers that he can go to, shop your business around, try and fit a package to your needs, to your business needs, to your family's needs at the best possible price for you. That is Tundra Insurance at 701-969-1661. Find Tundra Insurance on Facebook and Twitter, or just stop by. We are one building south of Big Irv's on the main drag in Horace. Eli Mostert was complaining, apparently, that he's out of shape, meaning that they're putting him, hopefully, through some rigorous physical activity and practice. And so Coach was kind of making the point that he's getting closer, or at least, you know, he wouldn't be complaining if he wasn't talking about trying to get into game shape. I think what these young defensive tackles have done too is really bought him an opportunity. And by bought him an opportunity, I mean, you could get in a chance, you get a situation where he's out of shape and he can only give you 15 reps, but man, maybe they're really, really important 15 reps. And not only that, but it just takes 3 or 4 reps off of a Duttenheffer, off of a Heisman, off of a Derrett, whatever. If you can even work in a recovering Eli Mostert and get 9, because you probably get, this is a weird percentages thing, but like you could maybe get 60% of Eli Mostert for 30 snaps with his rehab, et cetera, et cetera. If you can get 90% of All-American Eli Mostert for 12 snaps, for 15 snaps, for 17 snaps, that's an incredibly valuable thing, especially on second, medium, and third and long.
So I saw this on the script and my eyes lit up. He's working out, or what's the exact situation? You know?
He's out of the boot. Out of the boot running. He was running last week and coach didn't necessarily let any cats out of any bags, but mentioned that he is complaining about not being in game shape. He's complaining about having to work himself back in. So I don't know if he's still practicing with the white jersey on or what's going on, but it's always been on the table. Okay. His return has always been on the table. It was talked about as an 8 to 10 week injury. Well, it happened in the second game of the season. So we're upon that threshold. We are finding that threshold.
So, I mean, it's invaluable because you're talking about adding depth. And when you're a player that's been sitting out for that long at the caliber that Eli is, it, no matter how many snaps he's available, it's only going to boost everything, because he is going to put everything he has into those reps because he knows he's only going to get so many. He knows that going into the game. So you're talking about a guy playing with the hair on fire with those few reps. And that's why sometimes you see athletes play at their best when there is some sort of adversity, whether it's a, you know, like a, this is completely different, but like Brett Favre when against the Raiders, when he threw for 399 and 4 touchdowns, it was like the day after his dad died. The Michael Jordan flu game. I'm not saying that Eli is going to be going to doing to that caliber, but the point is sometimes when you have athletes that are competing and playing at a high level for, you know, the competition they're playing against, when their back's against the wall and then they do finally get an opportunity either to come back or something is going on in their life, whether it's an injury or, you know, like the flu, they're at their best. So I'm not saying I anticipate that, but the point is that I would not be shocked if those things were to happen, whether he has like a strip sack or, you know, some sort of big play that changed the whole complexity of a game. So that is very encouraging to see. I think that's very exciting as a roster. So that'll be certainly an interesting development, because that's completely news to me. The timeline makes sense. Hopefully he is able to do more than that. But the fact that they're complaining about being in shape or out of shape, sounds to me like it's a little bit of a hint of something. So hopefully that run defense gets a little bit better.
Yeah, and as an interior pass rusher, he's a special kid as well. The corner rotation tightened up. I think that was obvious with Marquise leaving. Look, there have been plenty of seasons where those corners don't get a breather. Plenty of seasons where Marcus and CJ, whomever, Jalen Allison, it doesn't matter. Those guys just played and played and played. And that's, I think, kind of the situation they're in. I know Jaden Price can fill in at slot. I know Jaden Price can fill in on the outside, but they might just ride Destin and Courtney to Frisco. And you know what? They've been in worse position than that, certainly. I mean, they've been in a lot rougher shape than two players the caliber of Destin Talbert and Courtney Eubanks and the type of players that they've become. I think they loved being able to rotate in a player like Marquise Siegel. I maintain, you know, my stance that I don't think that's going to go the way he wants, probably. But corner rotation tightening up. Another thing that I think is interesting to just kind of pay attention to, and as much as I love TK Marshall, and I think he can be a really big part of what they're doing moving forward, Tomerik obviously won't be a big part of what they're doing moving forward. He's going to be done after this season. You could see, I think, a John Crockett-like role for Kobe next season if he continues to fill out and kind of be this multi-purpose back, in the sense of he's always been able to catch it. He's always been able to get the outside runs. If he can run kind of their power stuff, and it's really like him and TK, and remember, there's no Bussy, there's no Lipke, there's no Tomerik, there's no Dom. None of those guys are walking through that door next year. I think you could have a massive role for Kobe Johnson in 2023. Maybe one that gets him some look to that next level. I don't know, but really enjoying the development from the young man, becoming a more well-rounded running back. His status as a home run hitter has never been in doubt, but I tell you, if some of those go for 5 or 6, it makes the ones that go for 70 a little bit more frequent. And they're, you're not just worried about contain. You're not just worried about, okay, don't let him turn the corner. You have to worry about, you know, 88 and out the gate from A-gap power. Trev, what are they working on? We're approaching an hour here. I don't know that we had this in the plans here for just the Montana recap podcast, but that's okay. We went a little heavy on Pro Bison. I went a little heavy on Tundra Mania. What are they working on this week?
Short week, a lot of film review. Make sure you're on your P's and Q's, alignment, assignment, sound. The result will take care of itself.
All righty. Thank you to Trevor Gebhardt. Thank you to our sponsors, Tundra Insurance and Gateway Chevrolet. Thank you to you wonderful people for listening to this on a Tuesday morning. Have a phenomenal week, everybody. Go Bison.